Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Guillermo del Toro and his love for monsters.
Or the monster sexy ass.
Yeah.
In sexy. Shape of water.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Guillermo del Toro, like, he's like the bi representation that we need in the world.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's not enough monster representation.
Yeah. Well, other than Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. Because Beast is kind of hot, honestly.
Were you upset when he, like, became human?
Yeah. I was just kind of like, oh, man, another whitewashing.
God. Brown, man. Brown is the way
to go. Brown is in. You should have just kept him as the monster. That's it.
God damn it. Fabrona.
What up, chingona? What's fave? Okay.
We're going to keep this. This is hilarious. Okay. So we're going to do a part two of Guillermo del Toro today.
Yeah.
With Fabrona here.
Can that be my permanent nickname from now on?
Yeah, like, Fabrona. Put it on your Twitter.
Okay. That's going to be my handle now for Instagram, Twitter, yeah. Everything.
Anybody wants to find Fidel, can find him at Fabrona.
Yeah, be Fabrona.
Oh my god.
Yeah, at Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everything.
Fucking everything from now on.
Yeah, my birth certificate's gonna say Fabrona.
You can change it legally.
Yeah, that's it.
So?
Do you,
You saw Shape of Water recently, right?
Yeah, I ended up watching it. I actually kind of want to watch it twice, honestly, just because there's a lot of stuff that I feel like I missed. Just watching it, just because you're kind of dwelled into it, but I really enjoyed it. It was a nice film. Like, it's another one of those, like, Guillermo del Toro movies where he, you know, it's a whatever movie first, and then the horror comes in after. So yeah. So with this one, it's like it's a French film first, French love film.
Really?
Yeah, and then the monster comes in after.
Oh shit! Yeah. That sounds completely different from the trailer.
Exactly, and I mean, like, they kind of showcase it on the trailer to be, I don't feel like they, I guess, represent it right.
And that's, yeah, just, it gives up, like, oh, animal cruelty vibes type of thing.
Yeah, it kind of shows it as a King Kong sort of thing, but it kind of really isn't. It's its own sort of, I guess, its own monster, really. No, but there's just so many good things about it. It's definitely, you could see that Guillermo del Toro is, like, just kind of fine-crafting everything that he's done, like, for the past, you know, what's it been, like, 2 decades that he's been making movies?
Yeah.
And he's just kind of, like, honed in on it, and this is really just one of those films that showcases.
He just executed the shit out of that?
Yeah, pretty much. And it has his tropes, too. Like, there's things in Guillermo del Toro movies that are always present. There's a girl with some red shoes. There's fairy tale aspects. There's love. There's horror. There's everything, and it's a really good movie.
I was so excited when I saw the trailer because I was just like, this is gonna be another personal film. It's gonna be another Penn's Labyrinth, like, level of detail.
Yeah, and you could really tell. I mean, he puts in a lot of detail into most of his movies. That's why it's like they're so rewatchable. Like, just the other day, I noticed that, like, Penn's Labyrinth, like, whenever I was watching it again, I didn't notice that the fawn is de-aging as you go along in the movie.
I had never noticed that either.
Like, he...
I just thought it got darker, like...
No, like, in the beginning, he's, like, super old. He basically looks, like, blind as hell. Like, you can see his eyes are, like, blue.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the movie, he's just, like, this, like... Just, like, sleek, fawn. He looks nice.
He's all sexy.
Did
Guillermo del Toro make him sexy, too? Yeah.
He's all sexy, like the monster in Shape of Water. He's just posing.
He has some explaining to do. I have some questions for Del Toro.
Yeah, he has a thing for sexy monsters.
A little bit of a kink there.
Yeah.
I guess before we get started, we'll go ahead and get a little bit of an introduction on who you are. This is a new channel now. This is Fabronas y Chingonas. There's a replacement, if you will.
Yeah.
This is Fidel. I don't know if you want to disclose your last name or not.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's Murillo. But yeah, I'm my name's Fidel. I basically am an artist here in Dallas. That's what I just kind of take pride in. I do
Peep
love.
the Instagram. We're gonna have his work up there.
Oh, thank you.
For sure.
But yeah, I work on a lot of artwork. I've been dabbling in storytelling, and as of recently, I've been wanting to kind of do film as well, just because I've taken an interest in just everything that is film aspect.
I'm excited about that. Hopefully that really goes somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like a lot of work, but
Fuck yeah.
yeah, because to be honest, just like from looking at it, it's like I forget who said it, but it was like it encompasses everything that you kind of enjoy. So it's like artwork, music, color theory, everything that you pretty much enjoy, and just everything that is creative is just put into one thing, and you get to channel that thing and just be awesome at it.
Yeah, it takes
Or
everything out of you,
yeah,
which
or
is why Del Toro makes so much sense.
yeah.
This is like that's what he does.
I was watching an interview from him, and it didn't really give me too much courage to do filmmaking. But it like it, he sounds like he's really enjoying it. But he says that like whenever you do filmmaking, it's like eating a turd sandwich. And the more
Fuck.
yeah, and the more you get popular and more you get famous, they just add a little bit of more bread to it,
So it tastes less
so
bad,
it
kind
tastes
of.
less bad. So
Oh, God.
the shit sandwich isn't that bad. I can curse in this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Our names are a curse word. Like, if you go on iTunes, it's bleeped out.
Really?
Yeah. It's kableep and kableep,
They
whatever the fuck.
bleep it out automatically,
Yeah,
or
once you subscribe, you're good. But if you just search it, it's
cap
bleeped
leap
out.
and
It's
cheap
like
leap?
C and then a shitload of asterisks.
Really? I
Yeah.
didn't know cabronas is a curse word though.
Yeah, Cabrona and Chingona, they're both curse words, I think.
Right
Fucking
on.
sucks.
But to be honest, so like just me just saying this, like it's like I'm kind of proud of you guys. It's I really
Shook.
I really dig the fact that you guys are doing this channel and doing this podcast. Like it's awesome in this day of age to find representation. I mean, in all aspects. I mean, just seeing as how booming of a business like bigotry and just being like a racist is like nowadays.
Yeah, you can make it to all the way up to the presidency these
Yeah,
days.
exactly. I mean, you can get you to way to the top, but I'm glad that you guys are putting to the forefront, because honestly, like I've heard a couple of your guys' podcasts, and there's stuff that I didn't even know about. Like there's a couple of shows that you guys have recently recommended that I kind of want to delve into just because I didn't notice. You guys talking about Coco the other day, I was like,
Yeah.
it made me laugh whenever you were talking about the Frozen skit and everything. Like
Fucking Frozen,
fuck
yeah.
it. I'm still pissed about that too, dude.
They got removed eventually, so.
But still, it's like I didn't get to make that. Like I had to watch it with a
Yeah,
fucking
me too.
yeah. But no, it's like in this day of age, like I said, you guys are doing like God's work. I mean, if you believe in
God's
that.
gay as fuck. No, I'm just
Yeah.
kidding. I was just kidding. But, I mean, he's brown.
He's brown.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for saying that. Like, I'm over here, like, shook as fuck. I still don't understand why people will listen to us. Like, thank
Because you
you,
guys are
all of you.
like, to be honest, you guys are funny. Like you guys literally make me laugh sometimes. It's like it's good hearing just kind of like your perspective on things.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's like a big thing that Fried Papita was into. Because for me, it was like, I want to talk about these shows and I want to talk about representation. But she was like, I want people to see our perspective.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that I didn't really think anybody gave a shit what I had to say. So I didn't.
To be honest, it's awesome hearing people's different perspectives, and like you kind of make jokes about that too. It's like I don't know why anybody wants that, but
Yeah.
not like I mean I genuinely dig hearing you guys talk about like I guess what you guys see in the media and everything, because there's a couple of things that I don't even notice is just kind of like that. Yeah, it could be kind of a little bit hate driven, honestly.
It's the little things.
Yeah,
It's in the details.
it's a very small details and everything like that. But at the end of the day, I mean, people could be like, oh, that's so PC and it's so nitpicking and everything, but it's little stuff that adds up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that because we like honestly, anytime that anybody that's not like gay and female that listens to us, I'm just like, why? But that's awesome. That's good. And especially we do have some like recent episodes that are just not our typical gay women stuff. We have like the Guy at Garcia Bernal episode and then the other Guillermo del Toro episode and we have some other stuff coming up. So I'm just like
That's really what dwelled me into it, honestly, because I'm a huge fan of GDT.
Yeah.
And once I started listening to your guys' podcast and just like hearing that episode, I was like, you guys make me laugh, you know?
Good.
Yeah, so that's an automatic in for me.
We're really drunk during that episode.
Yeah.
We did that episode twice, like fucking exclusive news here, but we did the episode twice because the first time we were too drunk.
Really?
Yeah, so there exists a horrible edit out there.
You need to put that one out. I want to hear that.
You'd have to pay me because I hated how messy we were.
You hear that, guys? They have a Patreon, they have a Kickstarter.
I'm about to fucking put that up. Yeah.
Put out that episode. smash that
motherfucking like button. We're gonna get a YouTube channel too.
Yeah, put that up. Be like, hey, put out that episode where they're too drunk.
Yeah, just too drunk. It was bad. We also did our first episode twice, and we ended up going with the original.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's trial and error. I mean,
yeah.
How many guys have you guys episodes yet? It's like 20 now?
We're over 20 right now. By the time this episode comes out, this will probably be closer to 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, that's awesome. I hope you guys continue on with that. I know you guys are dealing with the fact that you're all the way in Cali now, but I hope you guys
Long distance.
Tonight's
my last night in Dallas.
Yeah.
And so that's how far back we are in time right now. You're hearing this like in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, so today we're going to talk about two more Guillermo del Toro films. Last time we did Pan's Labyrinth and Pacific Rim, which is one kind of old, one kind of new. But this time we're just going to do old.
Yeah.
We're going back in the day and doing Chronos and The Devil's Backbone.
His very, I guess, like passion films. Like
his, like, came from his blood, sweat, and tears films.
Literally. Like basically these movies that require him to kind of dwell deep into it, like it makes him like lose a ton of weight. Like I heard with Pan's Labyrinth, he lost like 50 pounds or 60 pounds or something like that.
I believe it, man. Shit's stressful. I mean, I've done tiny little projects and I'll like rip my hair out.
Yeah. And it's insane, but like you could tell that this dude has detail into his movies, and you could tell what all that time goes into, time, money, and sweat. Like,
like fuck a family, fuck friends, this is my life type of shit.
Pretty much, like he dives into it. Like I know with Chronos, he was like $500,000 in the hole.
Fuck, like, and then that's his first feature.
Yeah,
and he was directing and screenwriting.
Yeah,
he was 20 fucking 8 years old. Like
exactly,
he's just like a little older than we are now. I could not imagine.
And he had his own like creature shop business where he was doing like special effects and everything like that, and then he did the like I said, he owed a ton of money. He borrowed like money from people he really shouldn't have, because he could have been his ass. Like it, like
had it not gone well.
Yeah, but he received like a check, like so many checks for like having such a great like film, that he literally like just like bawled out crying whatever he received. like he was like Miss America or something. Like
it's relatable. Anytime I get a check, I get like that.
Pretty much. It's like making ends meet. It's like I don't know if I can afford that ramen noodle.
That's so stressful. Like I like when I was in college, I didn't even want to borrow money for that. Like it stressed me out way too much.
And it drives, dude. Like I feel like that's what's really that's the personal thing about GDT, is that he, whenever I say GTT, it's obviously
Guillermo
del Toro. But yeah. That's the thing about him, is that all of his stressors, all of his like pain and anguish and everything that he's gone through, you can see that reflect in his movies.
Yeah.
Like Devil's Backbone, I think whenever he made that movie, he just got done off of Mimic.
And, yeah. Mimic didn't do quite as well, did it?
No, but he was also under a lot of pressure with directors.
Like he didn't, I think with that one, it was like not enough funding, shit like that.
Yeah, not enough funding. The direct or the executives were just like
bitches. Maybe yeah. You know, they're, if you think assholes. About it, possibly because of his experience with Mimic, he went on to do Pan's Labyrinth so differently.
I forget the timeline. Is it he did Mimic and then Pan's Labyrinth?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
Mimic was first, if I'm not mistaken.
But was it Devil's Backbone after that, or was it Blade? I forget. Like he's done so many movies, like it's just kind of weird about the timeline.
Blade was before Pan's Labyrinth. Labyrinth was in 2006.
Right. But he did Backbone before Mimic, or was it after Mimic?
Let me find out real quick. That's a good question. I did not look into Mimic that much.
But anyways, like I think like his father got like kidnapped at one point.
Yeah,
and
so he has like this slight hatred for Mexico in that way.
Yeah, he moved out of it with his family.
Yeah, he was like, fuck this shit, I'm fucking pissed. And I'm out.
Yeah, and he's
like, what the fuck is up, bro? That fucking Vine. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
But no, like, he had that, and he just got done paying off, I think, all of his stuff for Kronos. And yeah. James Cameron ended up actually lending him the money so that way his father could...
That's right. James Cameron saved his father's ass.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
And what's crazy, too, is that the law enforcement in Mexico was like, hey, we got the people who's kidnapped your father. We don't got the money, but if you pay us this amount of money, we can leave you in a room with him and you can beat his ass for like a half an hour.
Did he... do it?
He didn't do it.
I would have done it.
Yeah, but like
not even because I like my parents that much, just for fun.
But at the same time, it's like, you know how crazy stuff is over there. They could have easily said, oh, this is him, but it could really just been some random
schmuck. True.
And that would have been just a way for him to vent, but he didn't take it.
Yeah.
And so like he talks about that sort of stuff in his films, like the violence and the path that people take. So like in
he blurs that line. This is a big part of Kronos. He blurs that line between good and evil.
Yeah. And Kronos, I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of passion that was put into that. He was reinventing the vampire. He was telling a personal story between him and his grandma and their differences and everything like that. And
let's get into that one. Let's start off chronologically.
For sure.
Which we didn't do last time. Sorry.
No, you're
right. So yeah, that came out in 1993.
Yeah,
it's like literally his first feature film he directed and wrote, which is a common thing with him. The thing about this movie that I found out was pretty special too is that not only did it put him on the map, it put Mexico on the map. Really? Like Mexico was struggling with its own film industry, putting out very few films and not getting any critical acclaim. But this movie, like, it didn't like do everything for Mexico, right? But it helped them a lot.
Yeah.
It, like, people were actually watching this shit.
We're slowly getting there because I mean Mexico just are now putting out animated films and they look really good. Like,
yeah, that's fucking amazing. But this was like,
yeah, this was back in the day, fucking like, nothing. Like
2.5 decades ago.
He even said like he worked with nothing but like Mexican, like special effects people, nothing but like Mexican like cinematographers and stuff like that to come out with the film.
Yeah.
He said he didn't really dig it too much just because there was a lot of twists and turns, but at the end of the day, he really liked the fact that he put out that film.
I mean, yeah, hell yeah, because I mean, the dude, I mean, I would, as a 28-29 year old, I'd be fucking happy as shit that I got a feature film done
for sure
at that age, and it was like the second highest budgeted film in Mexican cinema at that time.
Yeah.
And unless your first one, I'd be fucking shitting myself. But
he has this thing for like reinventing vampires. I mean, even
in horror, like yeah, horror in general, he was like very disgusted by the like lack of detail and deepness in the horror films. He was like, really, you're just gonna throw blood on everything?
I mean, that's really just in this day of age, really everything. I mean, yeah. Just look at, I mean, I'm not dogging anybody for loving these movies, but like Insidious or The Conjuring and stuff like that. They're great, but at the end of the day, that's really all they are. They're just
horror. And they're all the same.
Yeah, they're just horror. They're just jump scares, and there's, like, CGI ghosts and stuff like that. And, I mean, GDT uses, like, CGI and everything like that,
too. He uses, like, Alex P. chooses his actors wisely and has such a unique and original, like, vision for it.
And those monsters that he makes are just, like, perfect, too. Like,
yeah, dude. Like,
even, like, his, I guess his, considered his quote-unquote, like, worst movie, Crimson Peak, still has some really awesome monster designs.
Well, I think one of the big things with him is like, I don't think he sees, when he creates some monsters, I don't think he sees them as monsters. I think he sees them as like characters in a fairy tale.
For sure.
And he just doesn't like see them as completely evil. Like with everything, he doesn't see anything as completely evil or completely good, even though he does have like certain characters that are very innocent.
The way that he usually puts it is that humans are the monsters. Like,
true.
Like with any movie that he's done, like whenever they refer to the monster as a monster, they're really not monsters. Like, I mean, they even do this in The Shape of Water, but literally, like they refer to, you know, the monster as a monster. But throughout this whole time, I already saw the antagonist. And I'm like, that's not really the monster. It's like it's just like in Pan's Labyrinth, Captain Vidal. Captain Vidal, like, was huge asshole.
Even though, I mean, that fucking, the monster was still a little bit of an asshole too.
Yeah.
But yeah, Vidal was the bad guy.
Yeah. Real quick, in Pan's Labyrinth, What do you think? Like, do you think that was all in their head, or do you think that was a real thing?
So I totally like to buy into the fantasy of it and just fucking think that she went to heaven to become a princess or whatever the fuck. That's what I choose to believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I believe too. One thing that I noticed this time watching it too, you notice that all three fairies are back at the end of the movie?
Fuck, I think so. I remember, like, yeah, shit was flying around.
Yeah, because remember the pale man ate them.
Yeah.
Ate two of them at least.
Ate two, right.
And then at the end of the movie, they're all back.
So then that's right there is really telling. It's like, it's not real.
No, I mean, I'm saying that it is real, but I feel like the Fawn in that movie was fucking with her the whole time. It was like a trial and error sort of thing. I feel like he was the pale man in that movie.
The Fawn?
The Fawn was the pale man.
Like in a different world or something?
No, like it was just the pale man doing like it was just one of the tests.
That's a fucking weird theory. I haven't heard that one.
Because like I said, like I didn't notice it, but it, like I did notice at the very end of the movie, you see the fairies flying around, all of them.
Honestly, if you think about it, yeah, in a way that's kind of a theory that works, just because why couldn't the Fawn go do this shit himself?
Exactly.
Little asshole, like, I mean, making a little girl do it.
Yeah, pretty much.
What an asshole.
But
yeah, and that's a good theory. Maybe, yeah. Because, I mean, the whole point of it, or what it seems like is the whole point of it at the end of the movie is to test her.
Pretty much.
You know what I mean? So none of those tests for shit.
I just think it's pretty real movie. He blurs the line between fantasy and realism, so that way you can talk more about realism, about like our lives and our world and everything like that. And I feel like it's a lot more grounded in that sense.
Yeah, it's exactly like what you were saying earlier, where it's the humans are the monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I guess back to Kronos.
we keep on deviating from it, but
there's so much to talk about. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Kronos, like, it wasn't what I expected. Like, whenever it reminded me a lot of this old Edgar Allan Poe story called the Gold Bug, which fucking Brandon back here introduced me to or whatever. It reminded me a lot of that because the Kronos device looks like it.
Oh, the one that that's slammed onto his hand.
Yeah, like pierces him.
The one that's, you know, the whole story is revolved around.
You know, the Kronos.
It's called the Kronos device. You know.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Yeah, so it reminded me of that, especially because it's like people are like the intent between in the movie is to get a hold of that thing, and then one person has it and doesn't know what the fuck to do with it.
And I feel like that's what Guillermo does a lot too, is he's very much a product of all of his influences, because you see literally everything. I mean, you see Wizard of Oz, you see Alice in Wonderland, you see Dracula, you see everything that's literally that he's just accumulated in his time and just put into movies. And he's like basically the ultimate fanboy that gets to make his own movies.
Honestly, yeah, like if you're that much of a fan and that like deep into it, and that like they should hire like hardcore fans for a lot of shit in the movie industry, honestly. Really,
like I feel like at the same time it could be dangerous just because they can make or break it sometimes, but I mean, you're taking that risk anyways. But
with anybody,
by hiring some schmo to do a movie. But yeah, no, like I really enjoy Kronos just because of that. Yeah, he reinvents the vampire. Actually, my first time watching that movie, I didn't even realize he was a vampire. I didn't put two and two together that he was.
I wouldn't have gathered that at all. Although the most telling scene when it comes to that is when the little kid makes him his little personalized coffin.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and then, or when the light goes through the holes in the roof.
Yeah.
That's probably the only time that you can really see that he's a vampire.
Yeah, and even then, my ignorant self was just like, oh, this dude's just an effect from the Kronos. But it's like, yeah, he's a vampire. I mean, even whenever he first gets the Kronos device on his hand, he puts his hand out like if he was Dracula. And then he just, like, he blocks himself, like,
he
almost.
He dabs.
Yeah, he basically dabs.
I posted that picture on Twitter. I was like, damn, I want to steal his look.
Yeah. But just little stuff like that, man. The movie's awesome. And
it has a lot to, like, a lot more to it. It's not as detailed and as intricate as some of his other movies, because it's his first one. But
it's his first film, yeah.
But it's still, like, you have to, I had to go back and do some reading.
Yeah. There's some appreciative stuff about it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, even then, it's like, a current a revolving theme in all of his films too, is that even from Kronos to today, the people who don't dwell on the vanity, don't dwell on the riches and the this and that,
and the immortality.
Yeah, and the immortality are really the ones that are free, that are immortal. Like the girl in the movie, she didn't know her father was dead. She doesn't know the concept of life or death until she comes into contact with her grandfather, who's dying. Who's like, he's immortal, but he has to go through the process of dying, essentially.
Yeah, and he like, God, that honestly, that's one thing that did bother me—that whole skin thing.
Yeah,
and that he just goes up to the other dude, and he's just like,
he just rips,
he's like, just rip it off, yeah. And he just like grabs his face. It was so fucking nasty. Just
rips it off his face. And even there's a one part in the movie too where Ron Perlman's character, I forget his name, but
the one that was kind of like the buffoon of the whole thing
with the nose thing, the cosmetic nose.
You know,
thing?
He used him later on for Hellboy.
What?
Yeah, that's the dude that was Hellboy.
I'm kidding. I love Hellboy.
He was on Pacific Rim too.
Oh yeah, he was on Pacific Rim. I forget his character in that, but
he was the guy collecting the alien bones.
Right, right.
Oh, the cabrón is here, by the way, guys.
Hi!
He was like something Chow. I forget his name, but he was awesome in that movie too. I feel like all of his roles that he writes for Ron Perlman, he writes it around Ron Perlman's character, like his actual personality.
Yeah, like help. The good thing.
Hellboy is very much a product of Ron Perlman. Like, that's why I love that film so much. Like, or those films, anyways.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Hellboy 3. R.I.P.
Shit. But yeah, I mean, but, fucking A. I guess they wanted to. One of the things that a lot of people read into Ron Perlman's character was that he was like a kid that was turned into a thug for no reason.
Pretty much.
But I never saw the kid in him. Like, I was just like, this guy's an asshole.
Well, I mean, he did everything that his uncle made him do without question.
Which is stupid. Like, he was always complaining about it.
Yeah, and even at the end, it's funny, too, because he's like, what in the world is this Kronos device even for? He's like, it's immortality. He's like, this guy locks him, like, his son, his nephew says about his uncle, is like, this guy locks himself up in a room all day.
Why would you want to fucking live forever?
Where? Yeah. And he says that, and it just like completely blows my mind with the film every time, just because it's like,
it's true. Yeah, like, it's fuck. True. Like why who wants to live this way?
Why do you want to live forever if you're just gonna lock yourself up like that? Mm-hmm. What's the point of even living?
Yeah, he has a fucking shitty life, and then the grandfather or whatever, his life goes to shit as soon as the Kronos device comes into his life.
Yeah, I mean he was very much just a seldom dude, and then all of a sudden he has this thing, and it's basically tearing up his life.
He like shaves off his mustache and like goes to his wife and is like, hey, I'm sexy now.
Even his wife is like, what's that like?
Ignores like everybody at the debt party or whatever.
She was like all worried about herself and everything like that, but she sees him and she's like,
Hey. They're like whispering in each other's ears. It's gross.
Yeah.
Oh God. But I mean, fuck, it was that one gave me more horror vibes than Pan's Labyrinth did.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah, I feel like it was more horror-oriented. You could definitely tell a lot of his influences went into it. And Pan's Labyrinth was really his magnum opus. Like,
this is a standout film from him.
Yeah, really, though. It's definitely one of my favorite films. I definitely love it. Just because, like I said, every time I watch that film, there's some new things that I see.
Yeah, and even if I don't fucking catch anything new, like, it's good.
Definitely.
It's so good.
And the acting's on point. The cinematography's on point.
The cinematography.
I
love saying cinematography.
Because it's just, they got that fun little say.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I was going to say, fucking Kronos, I think one of the main things that I got out of it was that was the start of his blurring the lines between good and evil.
Yeah.
Like, that was just the main thing that I got from that movie. I was just like, he never wants to set this as, like, this is the bad guy, this is the good guy. Like, everybody has a shitty side to them.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And that's a common theme throughout all his movies, honestly. They all kind of blur the lines. There's character flaws to everybody. Because in reality, in life, there's no purely evil guy. There's no purely, you know, good person.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. It's there's a very much blurred lines, like it's like, you know, these villains, they're like, I'm gonna rule the world sort of thing, but in reality you have Donald Trump and he doesn't think he's doing anything bad.
He really thinks he's doing something good out there.
But he's actually a piece of shit. But at the same time, in his eyes and the people who follow him, everybody thinks he's right on, dude. But
yeah,
and I love that he's able to basically put that into his films.
I like that he tried to flip the script, because he really was just observing other horror films and just was pissed about it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that he later on honed into more of his fantasy, almost fairy tale esque type of work, which is like, you kind of see the progression, because then I guess we can start getting into The Devil's Backbone, where he gets into like blurring, you know, the lines between humanity and death and all this other shit. Like,
you watched that one, right?
The Devil's Backbone. I did forever ago, though. But
it's it's almost kind of like Pan's Labyrinth Part One, almost. You know what I mean?
It's they call it the brother film of it.
Yeah,
Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah.
Like, as Pan's Labyrinth is like a very much a womanly kind of film, where it's like a girl coming into her own, rebelling against what society has to tell her to do.
And she's compared to her mom in that, whereas the little boy in Devil's Backbone was more compared to like the men around him.
Yeah, I mean, even the father figure in that film too, which is Federico Lupi, the guy from Kronos, he was very much something that was centered around too.
That's where I fucking know him from.
Yeah,
he was the fucking old dude. That's right. He's always trying to scam on some old lady.
He's also in Pan's Labyrinth. He's the king at the very end.
Oh shit! Guillermo del Toro.
He reuses his characters.
Yeah, he reuses.
He's an auteur. Like, he has all the elements of it. I've just noticed.
He has people who like, who once he has in his films and once he trusts them. There's a reason why he really loves Federico, because
he's fucking talented as shit. He was lucky to get him for Kronos.
For sure, he's very talented. He was very much also just a very predominant like Mexican.
He was sought after.
There's something that he told him like in his film is like, he's like, give me freedom, but give me parameters, and then I'm willing to excel in those parameters.
Yeah.
And ever since that day, he was just like, this is my boy. I'm gonna have him. I'm gonna have him in everything, because he's able to put that into his films as well. Like, he has budgets with his films, but he's able to work outside of those parameters. He digs out of his own pocket, so that way he can put in special effects, or he can hire concept artists. Even like, he spent like $10,000 on concept art alone.
I believe that, because I mean, this dude, like, he always, like, he needs, you know, he needs the money for certain things, so he's not willing to skimp on like the artistry of his film
for sure.
But like, he's also not willing to give in for money. You know what I mean? Like, he's not gonna like change something in his movie just for money.
He's very much a person that preaches your finances don't determine your success.
I mean, you just need a fucking production value. Like, Mimic is a good example of that. Like, he definitely had to figure it out.
And I'm not sure, is Pacific Rim 2 gonna be directed and
filmed? I don't think he has anything to do with
that. Sucks.
Pacific Rim
1 was actually really good. You know, there's a lot of good things about it.
He's not a part of it.
I know there's a bunch of passion films. I know there's a difference between his passion films as well as his
Hollywood
films.
He gives up a lot for those, but he also, like, for me, when I think Pacific Rim, when I think Hellboy, I don't think Guillermo del Toro. When I think, maybe Hellboy a little bit.
To be honest, I do, because at the same time, like, I feel like there are two different aspects of his personality. Hellboy is very much a way for him to get out his love for Lovecraftian films, and then Pacific Rim is a way for him to kind of tell his love about monsters, like big kaiju monsters, as well as
Shape of Water, some shit.
Yeah, as well as like Power Rangers and stuff like that. Like, just, you know, like, he's able to kind of put his love into it, but he's very much commercialized whenever he comes to those movies. Like,
I only like or really get into his personal, I consider his personal films.
But they're also stepping stones, though.
Yeah.
You gotta know that, too, because Hellboy, Lovecraft, I mean, he really wants to do that Mountains of Madness, which that'd be freaking great for him to do. Blade was a way for him to do the Stain. It's The Strain, not The Stain.
So it's kind of like horrible. Whenever you just, like, go and work overtime. Like, basically the Hollywood films are, like, his overtime, and then he, like, reinvests into, like, something that he cares about more.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think with Mimic, or I think the movie that he did before Devil's Backbone, it was really for him to do Devil's Backbone.
I think it was Mimic.
Yeah. And then once he's able to do those movies, I mean, he's able to excel. So while he
it's
does...
Like on and, it's like Devil's Backbone, then Hellboy, then Pan's Labyrinth, and then like some... Then Hellboy again.
Didn't he do A Book of Life, or was he just a producer in that? Producer. He was just a producer, yeah. But yeah, he's able to do these films that he doesn't wholeheartedly delve into, but it's a way for him to, one, get out some of his creative influences.
Yeah, and so it's like, yeah, it's Hollywood. It's trash, but it's my trash. It's pretty trash. It's, exactly. It's the gold trash bag.
It's a way for him to kind of get out some of the feelings that he does.
Yeah. So
I'm glad he's not doing Pacific Rim 2.
Yeah.
Actually.
Really?
Yeah, because I love Pacific Rim 1, but I was kind of like, I'm good with you just doing one and done.
Yeah. I think I feel like he's not the kind of guy to just keep doing it, you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason there's not a Pan's Labyrinth 2.
He's not a sequel kind of guy.
Yeah. He's like, this was my passion and it's done.
Yeah. I really loved Hellboy 2 and I really wanted a Hellboy 3, but I'm so excited for the new Hellboy. Let me just get that out there.
just putting it out there. Yeah. I like it, yeah.
Just putting that out there. I do want to watch the new Hellboy, but...
Yeah. So, as far as Devil's Backbone...
Yeah.
I mean, would you agree that it, like, strays a little further from, like, horror genre? Because, like, with each type horror-type movie that he does, it's like it gets less horror-y, like, typical horror-y.
A little bit, but it's more of, I guess, what you consider to be the parameters of horror. Because, for instance, Godzilla was very much a horror movie, but it was focused around a lizard monster that did destruction and atomic bombs and stuff. But really, he was an atomic bomb. Like, Godzilla was very much an atomic bomb in that sense, that he was wrecking everything without being forgiven or without doing any sort of thing like that. And he just, there was no good, there was no bad, he just destroyed. Devil's Backbone is very much that too, where it's like, there's this bomb in the middle of the facility.
Or the camp or whatever
it is. Yeah, the camp. As well as, I guess, like, metaphorically, the main antagonist of the movie, he's also a ticking time bomb. So they're both reflections of what could be, of the destruction. And eventually, from the events that unfold in the movie, that bomb sets off.
Yeah, that's another one where, like... The human is the villain type of thing.
The human is
because they have the little ghost boy.
Yeah.
But the ghost boy is like innocent as can
human,
be.
It's adults. And
yeah.
The evil people and the children are seen as accessories. Because think about the spine.
Yeah.
So yeah, children are always seen as like innocent. They get spared from the humans are evil thing. Yeah. But in general, so like yeah, the human, the Vidal-esque character.
Yeah.
Was the bad guy.
Yeah, he was, and like she said, it was like. The kids were very much used. In the Devil's Backbone, the center around it is that there's this jar that they put a fetus in, and then they rip the spine so that way they can fester it. It was like a super drug, basically. Mm-hmm. And so they were really using the innocence, the immortality, and the everything of the kid so that way the adults can grow further. And in that sense, it's very much Peter Pan. It's very much Peter Pan and the Lost Boys. There's these kids that are just basically immortal because they don't know the concept of death because they don't know their parents are dead. They're very much products of war, but they're in this camp and they're immortal. And then there's this antagonist who is very much, he's based on vanity. He's based on pride and what's owed to him. And he wants to take revenge out on the kids but destroy everything in his way so that way he can... You know,
continue to
be an asshole.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just shows like while there's not monsters or there's not any sort of elements of, I guess, what's considered traditional monsters in his films.
Yeah, the little ghost boy.
Yeah.
He's
not actually the bad guy.
Right.
The real monsters are the humans. All the antagonists in his movies are not the monsters. They're just things that want to exist, essentially. Yeah, and it's very sad. Like, even in Shape of Water too, they dive in that concept, which again you got
to see.
You have to see it. But the antagonist in that one too, his introduction is by far one of the best introductions that I've ever seen in any sort of movie, like of an antagonist. I don't know if I should break it down for you, but it's just the way that he's introduced into the movie. It's just like, wow, you were able to depict this monster like right away, depict everything that he's about and who he is, and just do it in one scene alone. And that's why I love Guillermo del Toro. He's able to know the concept of, or able to tell you who these people are in just like minuscule things.
He's progressed pretty quickly, I guess.
Pretty much, dude. And I love the guy, man. He's very much one of my, I guess, heroes in that sense.
So what'd you think of the protagonist of Devil's Backbone, the little kid?
Jaime and I think it was Carlos.
Yeah. Those two. That's right. Because I mean,
technically, I don't see that they were the center of the film, honestly.
Well, yeah, but like they're just like the technical protagonist, kind of like in Pan's Labyrinth, it was a little girl.
They were basically you looking into this world. They very much start the same way as Pan's Labyrinth do. You're dropped off as in this car, and this car leaves you in the middle of a facility that you don't want to be in, and
yeah,
all of a sudden you have to deal with the facts that there's crazy shit happening.
Yeah, and also as that, like, you know, she, like, in Pan's Labyrinth, she starts off and she's, like, immediately distracted and fairies and by this labyrinth, mm-hmm. and the kid gets dropped off and he's, like, the only thing that he cares about is his little comic books and stuff like that.
And he sees the ghost boy in the far end of the facility and everything.
Yeah, so they're just, once again, the kids are, like, outside of the bigger picture.
One thing, spoiler alert, but I don't know if you caught this, but the kids in Devil's Backbone are actually in Pan's Labyrinth. As adults.
And the revolutionaries, right?
Yeah, they caught him at the very end, and they're just sitting down, and Vidal comes up to him, and he's like, "Can you talk?" And he's like, can't talk because he's like gurgling because he got shot in the neck, and he just has a bunch of blood, and he shoots him.
Fuck.
And it's Carlos and Jaime just sitting there from Devil's Backbone.
That's crazy. That's like,
yeah,
hardcore fan shit. You look at it, you're like, hey, time.
Yeah, and that's cool thing too, because there's three films that Guillermo del Toro said that he's going to do on the Spanish Revolutionary stuff, the Spanish Civil War. And so it's Devil's Backbone, Pan's Labyrinth, and there's one film that he hasn't announced yet.
This fucking Guillermo del Toro better not die on us, because
nah, he sure shit cannot die, dude. Like, I really want to.
He's not
see...
allowed. Yeah, we're gonna fucking stick chronos on him and shit.
Yeah, and it. There's a bunch of things that I really do wish that he would have taken a part of, like The Hobbit, but he...
Oh, yeah, that was, like, a almost thing for him.
Yeah, and that would have been good to see him do instead of Peter Jackson, because I feel like The Hobbit wasn't very much in Peter Jackson's heart. Like, he just was like, I'm going to crank these out, and this is going to be it.
Yeah, I'm not a Peter Jackson fan,
no.
Personally.
I like Lord of the Rings. There's certain aspects that I didn't dig about it, but yeah. Shout out to Peter Jackson for having a queer movie.
Oh, you said shout out. Let's go to that. Hey, take a drink. But I mean, yeah, honestly, I didn't watch The Hobbit. I'm not like a fan of any of those, like not even Lord of the Rings. I did watch a couple of them.
I wasn't, but I like the fantasy aspect. I love the politics that are put into it.
That's another thing, like... he starts getting into politics with Devil's Backbone, which he doesn't do in Chronos.
Very much. He has a lot to say about that sort of stuff, too. And
now, yeah.
Yeah, if you hear him on his interviews, too, he has a couple things to say about that sort of stuff. He very much hates Trump, too, so I love him.
Oh, yeah. He's smart. He's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy.
He's a reasonable man.
Or at least he has common sense, anyways.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
Yeah,
really,
that's really all it takes, but...
Yeah, it's the, what can I say, Devil's Backbone is really the brother film of Pan's Labyrinth. You can find an appreciation in it if you're a huge Pan's Labyrinth fan, especially in the little things, because it's not a little girl, it's a little boy, and the fantasy portion of it, even though it's completely different.
Yeah.
And of course, the whole, there's basically another, like a younger version of a doll in it.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. He is basically a reflection of him.
Yeah.
It makes you laugh how good Vidal is as a villain too. Like he's very much
like
a
Hitler thing going on.
He has a Hitler thing going on. He's very vanity based.
He's a sadist.
He combs his hair even though it's under a hat. Like he has this watch that he carries around with him that's like broken, but he's very obsessed about his lineage and his immortality in life.
It's like his dad was definitely an asshole.
Yeah, and you could tell he was an asshole, and then if his kid knew anything of him, he would be an asshole. But
maybe. I mean, yeah.
But again, it's so human of movies, man. I really...
Do you think, probably not, because like we were talking about earlier, he's not a sequel guy, but do you think that he would make a movie about Vidal's son?
No. Well, maybe, to be honest, not his actual son,
like not actually going off Pan's Labyrinth, but like somebody based on that kind of a character that had an evil father that he didn't know about, you know? I think that would be interesting.
I think it would be interesting too. Seeing as these movies are essentially sequels to each other, mm-hmm. and seeing as he has one more in the canon that he wants to do for the Spanish Civil War, I could definitely see Vidal's son being implemented into the next one. I know that after Pan's Labyrinth, there's still 30 years of Civil War, even though they killed Vidal.
Pan's Labyrinth is post the Civil War, when the fascists were in power.
I thought it was during the Civil War.
The Devil's Backbone is during.
Are these movies mm-hmm. out of whack? No, wait.
They're the same time. Civil War's indie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because they're sequels to each other.
Well, they don't.
I don't know.
They are like it's brother and sister film. They're not chronological.
Are they?
Same time probably.
We could double check it, but yeah. I don't understand.
The whole thing.
Because that's why they're in that camp, because they're in the middle of that, and they're putting them there to protect him. And then in Pan's Labyrinth, the fascists have won.
I don't know why they would say that it was Jaime and Carlos there in Pan's Labyrinth. Then.
Well, it's just, I don't think it's literally them.
It's just
from what I hear, it was supposed to be, and that's, I don't know if that's coming straight from, that was coming straight from Guillermo del Toro.
Interesting.
So I'm not sure what the...
Chronologically,
they're at the same time.
I'm not sure, honestly. But I could definitely see there being one based around probably Vidal's son, or at least seeing him at least somewhere in the future.
Yeah.
Because unless they put one of the other characters in Pan's Labyrinth, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I definitely do want to see at least one more from him. And I'm wondering, because if it was this is a brother film, this is a sister film, what would be the third film in the canon? What would
the
he base it on?
Parent film, the son film,
yeah, the nephew film, el primo,
the cousin once removed.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah! So we didn't go super deep into the movies, but if you've already seen these films, and you'll fucking understand what we're talking about.
And they were essentially not spoilery. I don't feel like we spoiled anything in the movie. So if you haven't seen them, you definitely do.
Yeah.
Because they're really good films. They're very early. But they're obviously Spanish oriented, but I feel like if you understand Spanish and you're able to see those movies without the subtitles, I feel like you're able to almost know a little bit more than what a person that just would listen to it in English would.
Cronos is super convenient for the bilingual soul because they do it half English, half Spanish.
Yeah,
which was meant to try and entice an American, a Mexican American audience, yeah. and they failed miserably.
It didn't work too well.
It did not, but Mexico loved it.
What's funny enough too is that the I think the producers pressured him to do that too, and he didn't want to.
I thought he was into that.
I thought he wanted to
do the Spanish and English thing. With Pan's Labyrinth, he was like, "Fuck you, we're doing this in Spanish."
Yeah, and I'm glad he did that too.
Yeah, same.
Because honestly, at this point, I can definitely watch these films without looking at the subtitles anymore, just cause
even with the accents,
even if it's Spanish, I'm okay with it. I can still understand it.
Sí lo entiendo.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that I kind of miss in that sense, but it's still, the subtitles are there for a crutch.
Honestly, Guillermo del Toro is a fucking genius. And Shape of Water, go watch that. Go watch Cronos. Go watch Devil's Backbone. Go watch Pan's Labyrinth again.
Go watch Blade 2.
Blade. watch Hellboy.
The Strain.
Just go to his IMDb.
Yeah, just go look at his IMDb and just watch every film that man has made, because he's
in order. Like, imagine doing that one day. Like, that'd be a really fun Christmas, just watching everything he's ever done, including the fucking 4 episodes that he did before he ever did a feature film.
Yeah,
and that one random Mexican TV show.
Yeah, I heard that he did a couple of randoms. Like, he didn't even
That's
get
how
paid
he got.
For him. Yeah,
yeah, he was like an intern that was so good that they were like, "Fuck it, just write."
Yeah, and it's just a little bit, it just kind of capitalizing on the stuff that, like, his background being, I guess, his inspiration for films. But like, Cronos was basically him talking about his it was his grandmother and his complications between her always trying to exercise him.
Oh yeah, like, she did exercise him like several times. She hated his weird creativity and and interests and that stuff. That's true.
His
monsters. He literally based one of the characters off of his grandmother, right?
Yeah, and I mean, to the relationship between the father and the daughter was very much him and his grandmother.
Yeah,
their differences in the learning of to accept each other and everything like that.
That's so fucking cool. That's why it's still a good movie.
Yeah,
because he still put some of himself in it.
Yeah, and then his father won the lottery, so.
Oh yeah, his dad like became rich all of a sudden when he was a kid.
Yeah, and he got to read so many books that he brought into his home library that he got all of a sudden.
Yeah, and before the internet, guys. Like back then, you read the books, and that's how you got smart.
Yeah, you read all the encyclopedias, and that's about it.
Not Wikipedia, encyclopedia.
Encyclopedias, yeah.
Encyclopedia, but yeah. So Guillermo del Toro is awesome. Part two, that's what this was.
Definitely.
I know that you guys were missing Fire Papita this entire episode. She's what's happening? She's here. but she. This
what is, did I say? What's happening?
Oh my god! But we had Fidel here, who's an amazing artist. Why don't you tell them where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me on Instagram, as well as Facebook. My name is Fidel Murillo, so last name with two L's and one R, so Murillo.
And we'll probably tag him, but just in case they don't have us for some reason, you assholes. What's your Insta at or whatever?
It would be Fidel Murillo.
Really? Just at, like a straight up?
Yeah, Fidel Murillo. Dude. Art.
Fidel Castro.
I got my name in a book, so I can't really change it anymore. Like, I got my art featured in a book, so.
Oh, that's fucking dope. Yeah. So link us to that, and we'll try to post about that, too.
We'll do. I definitely appreciate that. But it was fun coming out to talk with you guys.
Yeah, this shit was awesome. This is like, you're here celebrating my last night in Dallas, my Dallas vacation with me. So, and it was pretty fun. This is like an easy conversation.
For sure.
So, this is Fidel, a.k.a. Fabrona. Fidel Fabrona. and then we'll be back soon with an episode with the regular host, co-host, Cabrona, Frarapita, etc. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, CYC Podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher. You're listening to us, you know. And then email us at cycpodcastmail@gmail.com.
If you don't follow them, I'll find you.
And hunt you down. Remember that wolf shit we used to say?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Anywho, my personal is MYTEPanda at Twitter, and Fried Papita is on Twitter and on Instagram.
I'm not on Twitter, unfortunately.
Fidel's not on Twitter. He's too cool.
I'm too cool for Twitter.
He has Facebook, but I mean.
Yeah, I got Facebook like an old man.
And like I said, great artist. Like, hire him to do shit for you. Like, I'm going to frame the picture that he's giving us today, which is fucking dope. Thanks for listening, guys. And thank you, Fidel, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I definitely appreciate it. Like I said, you guys are doing freaking awesome work here.
Gay God's work.
And I definitely want to see more from you guys. Like I said, I've heard a bunch of your podcasts, and I think that you guys acknowledging representation in any sort of manner is definitely great, because we definitely need more of it.
Thank you very much. And then if you guys loved having Fidel on here, let us know so we can have him back on at some point. And yeah, I mean, even if you guys don't tell us, we'll probably have him on again. So fuck you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening once again. And peace out. God, this is so weird saying bye without Cabrona.
We love you guys. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.